Welcome to your own health and fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman. I come to you weekly to discuss self-care and integrated health. Everybody expects to get it. Arthritis. Any ache or pain gets its name, especially in the absence of a more specific diagnosis. Still, I wonder if it's inevitable. Today's guest is medical writer Martin Zucker, who has written Preventing Arthritis, with pain specialist Dr. Ronald Lawrence, who is both an MD and a PhD. Join us in the next hour as we examine the myths about and the science of this most common complaint of advanced age. Los Angeles health writer Martin Zucker has been writing about alternative medicine, nutrition, and natural healing for more than 20 years. He's co-authored or written about a dozen books, including the just released Preventing Arthritis, A Holistic Approach to Life Without Pain. The book, co-authored with pain specialist, again, Dr. Ronald Lawrence, MD, PhD, was published by Putnam. Other recent books include The Miracle of MSM, The Natural Solution for Pain, which is also Putnam, The Veterinarian's Guide to Natural Remedies for Dogs, and The Veterinarian's Guide to Natural Remedies for Cats, and Natural Hormone Balance for Women. Martin Zucker is a former Associated Press foreign correspondent and has written hundreds of articles on health topics in the national publications, as well as safety and industrial video scripts for the National Safety Council. And we welcome him here today. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Lena. Thank you for having me on your show.
It was my pleasure. We ran into a little problem getting Dr. Lawrence on because he's got sort of contracts with people. He can't release copies of the tape to listeners with him on, which was sort of, we were all very disappointed, but you worked so closely with him on the book and you did so much of the research, then the book is sort of written in his voice, but my sense is that you can speak to his work pretty readily.
I'll try to plug in for him. I'm not a doctor, but indeed we did a lot of research together, and as with any book on prevention, and I should point out that this is the first book that has been published on preventing arthritis, and it's really a first attempt to look at arthritis prevention and bring that to public awareness. And you know, we look at the risk factors and try to give people a real sensible, practical approach to keeping their joints healthy. And what's interesting here is that these very same principles, these same recommendations, apply to people with arthritis. So if people are in your audience have arthritis, a lot of the things that we'll be talking about today also apply to people with arthritis. And so the recommendations can often reduce pain and improve mobility.
Well, it's very astute that you mentioned that there's very little written about preventing arthritis. And what it seems to imply is that it is possible to prevent it. And although I noticed that Dr. Lawrence, in the beginning of the book, as you write it, says that there is a certain amount of wear and tear that occurs in the joints and in the body, whether people are active or not. If you're not active, you lose flexibility and you lose your joints anyway. I mean, in other words, you lose it if you don't use it. If you use it and you use it inappropriately or too vigorously without enough rest, then you lose it too. But the implication here is that it is preventable.
Yes. It seems to me, after doing all this research and talking to Dr. Lawrence in great depth and to other experts around the country, that there are things that you can do to decrease your chances of developing them and developing our osteoarthritis. And what we're talking about here is the common wear and tear type of arthritis that's generally associated with aging. And
injury, because it occurs,
absolutely, yes,
it occurs with younger individuals when they've been injured.
Absolutely. And developing an injury to a joint early on in life can be it's being seen increasingly as a major indicator of osteoarthritis later on in life. And
so what do we actually find in a true diagnosis of arthritis? What do we actually see happening in the joint?
Well, I asked that question to a pathologist, and, And he came out with a pretty good answer from a pathology standpoint, looking at the you know, cadavers and examining arthritic joints. And what he said was that, you know, healthy cartilage, it feels slick and rubbery to the touch. And if in arthritis, the joints, like he said, have become battlegrounds, they have become kind of like a moonscape. And if you were to rub your fingertip on that, it would be kind of irregular shape, like a moonscape, where there are craggy peaks and ups and downs and rough like sandpaper. So it's a wearing away of the cartilage, and the cartilage is the tissue, the rubbery like tissue at the ends of bones where bones meet, that glide by each other and absorb shock. And we want to keep that cartilage as well oiled, so to speak, as possible to prevent the degeneration. When the cartilage degenerates, you get the wearing away of that tissue. That's when you get the bone on bone and the pain and the inflammation occurring.
Now, I want to get into what the possible theories are for why this may be happening. We've already explained that you're going to see this in people who have done really rough endurance exercise all their life, really peak performance athletes who have been extremely hard on their bodies, and you see it in non-exercises. But what I thought was very interesting is when in human history it first appeared. And what you want to go ahead?
Well, The exact date isn't really known.
No, I know. But
I think that what they've done, and archaeologists have found evidence of arthritic wearing away in some of their discoveries. And, you know, it goes back, you know, who knows, thousands of years.
Well, what you say in the book is that you see it first in Egypt, in the mummies in Egypt. And this is significant to me because I've studied, you know, this whole issue of diet and civilization.
Right.
And what happened is people changed their diet. And in Egypt is when we see the rise of an agrarian civilization.
Yeah.
And an increase in the amount of sugar and starches that people were eating. They went from a hunter-gatherer culture to an agrarian culture, a farming
exactly,
culture.
Exactly. And that's a question I asked an archaeologist, and what he said was just that. And you're absolutely right, Lena, that when people evolved into farmers and they began performing more laborious tasks requiring repeated motions of the same joints, that here's where the wearing away of the healthier, you know, of the musculoskeletal system may have occurred. But some other people have said that it may go back to, you know, there's a theory that when we went from apes and using, you know, walking with our upper extremities and evolved into upright, the bipeds, we put greater stress on the weight-bearing joint. So, No, who knows?
Except that we don't see, in the Paleolithic record, we don't see a lot of bone deterioration in hunter-gatherer cultures, even in modern hunter-gatherer cultures. And this goes back to stuff we've discussed on the show before, which is the research of Weston Price, who was a dentist.
Sure.
Who traveled in the 30s and 40s throughout the world and looked at native cultures and what their teeth look like in bones. And we see bone changes in cultures that load up on grains and particularly refined carbohydrate source foods. So I think that as he discusses, and as you both discuss in the book at length, the role of vitamin and nutrient dense diets is important in preserving bone.
I think that you're absolutely correct. I think Weston Price was a brilliant pioneer in his discoveries, and the kind of diets that we're eating today, the processed foods, so much sugar, I don't believe, and this is based on conversations with hundreds of doctors over the years, I don't believe in any way that it can contribute to optimal health, and certainly not the optimal health of the bone.
Well, and in fact, what Dr. Lawrence seems to feel very strongly in the book is that antioxidant vitamins, this whole issue of free radical production, anytime you see Inflammation. Anytime you see, let's put it this way, there's chicken and egg ways to look at this. If you fall down and severely injure your knee and the tissue becomes inflamed, there will be a high concentration of oxidative, of free radical production there, because oxygen is the way that we there's a lot of oxygen that goes on in our metabolic states. In a case of injured tissue, and you see inflammation, you see a lot of free radical production. And that's also the beginning of what can, in an injury state, if it's not handled properly, properly cause eventually a deterioration of first collagen, then cartilage, then bone, or a lack of redevelopment, an injury to the point where there's not the same kind of regeneration. So Lawrence, Dr. Lawrence talks a lot about the role of antioxidants, the most common of which is A and E and vitamin C, and of course has quite a bit to say about vitamin C. We'll come back to vitamins as a subject head, but certainly when he talks about this business of why is it going to happen, where is it going to happen, and what can you do to prevent it, the areas of prevention seem to be first nutrition and then issues around muscle weakness.
Yeah, the muscle weakness thing is very interesting, and in the book we quote a doctor researcher in England who feels that the whole issue of muscle weakness and dysfunction is as a risk factor for arthritis. This is Dr. Michael Hurley at King's College in London, and he says that he believes that that weak muscles contribute to excessive joint movement and instability,
hypermobility,
exactly, or irregular forces being applied to joints, and such abnormalities, such irregularities, can cause over time irregular wear and tear on the joint. So you're looking at a hypothesis here that may be quite significant. You're creating, due to muscle weakness, you're creating jarring, irregular pressures on the joints, and that can result in irritation of local nerve tissue, pain, microtrauma of cartilage. And so this could indeed be a major festering factor for the development of osteoarthritis.
Now, what's interesting when you talk about muscle weakness is that muscle weakness can occur in a lot of different ways. I mean, one way of thinking of it, the most obvious way, is people think of people they've seen who just don't exercise very much or do very little exercise, and they just aren't very muscular. There isn't much, they just don't look athletic in any way. But that isn't really the major problem with muscular weakness. I mean, there are people who, for instance, do lots of stretching, maybe do forms of yoga where they don't have to hold a posture very long, so that they don't have a lot of muscle strength, but they're very, very flexible. And those people are at risk because they're hypermobile. But the tricky part about muscle weakness is that somebody can appear to be quite strong and athletic and have an imbalance in the way that their muscles have been trained, so that the most famous of this is someone who moves around a lot. If you move around a lot in the world, your back is pretty strong, but your muscle, which is in the front of your back, your stomach muscles, if you don't work them, are weak. And if there's an imbalance, if there's a postural imbalance like that, that's the most common one, then you have trouble with your back because it dominates. So the other way to think of muscle weakness is that if people train themselves improperly or never train at all, use their bodies minimally and never look at their posture or where their weaknesses might be, that they're not having the right kind of structural integrity to protect them from, as you say, a inoptimal position when your heel strikes the ground, for instance,
right,
or for your knee.
Well, Lena, what you're bringing up is a whole Pandora's box of scenarios that are possible. You know, we can't go through life measuring every muscle and every muscle relationship with a ligament and a tendon. We should try to strive obviously for balance, but some of the tips that we have in the book here, the recommendations, I think are really important, and that is that for people who are intent on embarking on some physical activity, some regular physical activity, or they want to really get into tennis or really get into golf, or they want to get into running, they should really check with a very qualified sports medicine specialist who can do the measurements, who can look at their bone structure and see if indeed this activity is appropriate for them. Look, if you're a golfer or you're a tennis player, you're overusing one side of your body all the time. That in itself is a risk factor for developing tendonitis and down the line osteoarthritis. So there's all these risk factors involved. You want to try and minimize your potential for developing these risk factors. And that's what this book is all about.
Actually, what I was saying was a little different than that. I'm certainly not saying that people need to go to a sports physician and be analyzed, have their structure analyzed before they engage in any exercise.
It is a good idea to do that. It's a good idea.
Well, nevertheless, that wasn't what I was saying. What I was saying is that people engage in normal activities in their lives which develop their muscles in a particular way.
Yes,
so, for instance, constantly in our lives, all of our activities, this is an example, are in the front of our bodies, like driving, moving forward with our arms, all of that sort of activity, computer work,
sure.
All of that sort of activity is in the front. So people tend often to have rolled shoulders, rolled forward.
Absolutely.
And impingements in their neck.
Absolutely.
So what I'm trying to say is that any activity in your life, it's a worthwhile engagement to get involved in paying attention to basic postural rules of posture, you know, sort of, and understand a very rudimentary amount about the way that your spine is stacked and things like that. And there's all kinds of really easy ways to do that.
Sure.
There are classes in postural things. There's types of yoga where somebody will look at you. There's also just reading about it. And you have some tips in the book. But the point is that there are imbalances in muscle strength that normally occur, and that if you go out in the garden and try to do some gardening and you're not doing anything else with your body at all, that's when you start to put yourself at risk for some kind of micro trauma or even macro trauma in your joints.
Sure. And in the book, we talk about, we have a chapter called Stop the Strains from Becoming Pains. And this is addressed to people who do repetitive motion all the time in their jobs. For instance, at the computer, they're pecking away and thousands of times a day, the same kind of motions with your fingers. And then you're there in that lizard position where your arms are extended in front of you, and you may be hunching over. And if at the end of the days at the computer you're developing strain in your neck or strain in your back, Dr. Lawrence, who is a pain specialist, has been a pain specialist for 50 years, sees these kind of common day-in, day-out muscular strains as developing down the line into osteoarthritis. And because you are causing, over time, you're causing irregular forces on the joints, in your neck or in your spine or in your hands, wherever. And so he says, if you are developing such strains, do something about it. Pay attention to your body. Listen to your body.
In addition, I think what we've learned about repetitive strain injury is that in the old days when people were typing on a typewriter, people had been using typewriters forever, so they've been sitting and working in that position. There was a pause when they stopped to change the carriage, when they moved the carriage back. In other words, it was a manual return instead of just pushing a button. So there was always a little break, and people got up and walked around more than they do now. And I think that the lesson in that is that it is wise for people to pay attention when they're in pain to the most obvious sorts of things. In other words, it's always very common sense when small pains are starting to develop. It's often something as simple as a change in your chair or the position that you tend to sit in all the time, or the way, or even what Dr. Owens talks about, even the way you sit in bed and read a book, or how you watch television, how you talk on the telephone, whether you balance the telephone on your shoulder, types of activities are not insignificant. And
no,
I see this in my practice as well, that people will have persistent pain and they'll start going to a pain specialist before they even realize that there may be something very simple going on in their posture, and that stretching and exercising some in a balanced way and changing their activities, you know, doing some postural education makes an enormous difference. So that's part of the prevention.
Absolutely, Lane. And just, you know, if you're an intense a computer user like I am, when I'm writing, I can sit there for 6-8 hours a day. I'm up every 15-20 minutes and getting up, scratching myself, doing some yoga postures. Yoga is an incredible tool to prevent osteoarthritis. And in our book, Preventing Arthritis, we have a arthritis prevention yoga program, which was developed by Larry Payne, who is the author of Yoga for Dummies. And Larry has given us a number of very simple yoga stretches to do. They can be done in 5-10 minutes a day, or they can be done one or two of them at a time, and they really do a lot of good for your joints. And research is starting to show now, there's been a few studies done now showing that yoga, the stretching, creates more flexibility for the joints, that it exerts a mechanical force on the joints, which they believe is, which this initial research believes is very positive for joint health. So
yeah, the only caveat I would add is that it's as I said earlier, it's very important for people who are doing yoga to make sure that either the yoga style that they've chosen incorporates postures which cause enough contracting of the muscles so that people are building strength as they're doing it, because just being flexible is dangerous. Being flexible and being strong is really the key. So you need both. Let me just ID the show. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I have by phone Martin Zucker, who is a medical writer and who has co-authored with Dr. Ronald Lawrence the book Preventing Arthritis. And I'm Lena Berman. Go ahead. You were about to say.
Yeah, that's why we went to a pro like Larry Payne. Larry Payne is chairman of the International Association of Yoga Therapists. And indeed, he sees people who are in pain. He sees people who are in pain and have arthritis problems, and he is able to essentially prescribe for them a specific slate of yoga exercises. In for our book, he created a program which does just these things, starting from very simple breathing, which gets the spine moving. To other simple yoga postures, which are really good for just helping the joint, getting that mechanical motion, strengthening the ligaments, the tendons, the muscles around the joints.
Now, it's very important to say at this point that we are talking only about osteoarthritis, and there are some other forms of arthritis that are far more invasive, far more complex, and not so easy to prevent or cure. The most common one is rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune problem. And there are theories now that this may be, some people believe that these are caused by very small bacterial infections now. There's a lot of different theories why this kind of hyperimmune response is occurring in individuals. But this is not the same as osteoarthritis. And we are not talking about rheumatoid arthritis today. We're talking about osteo. How does someone with sort of aches and pains, when you talk about the myth of being stiff in the morning or being worse when you're cold, how do people actually know when they're in trouble? If they have certain aches and pains, how do they know that they're moving in the direction of an arthritic condition and when it's just a muscle problem?
Well, the muscle problem will tend to go away in a short period of time, whereas if you're developing into osteoarthritis, it's going to be persistent. So I think speaking in simplistic terms, that would be the good way. I mean, you can go out into the garden, you're not used to it, and you're going to get some muscle pain from kneeling down, and that would be myositis, which is some inflammation of the muscles. But it should go away in a few hours, or maybe the next day you'll have it. But if you have consistent pain, then you have to look and see that. That you may indeed be developing osteoarthritis.
And I might add to that muscle pain can be persistent, in fact, especially if you're dealing with a lot of repetitive injury type of situations where or bad postural habits or like you're driving in a car in bucket seats, and your bottom is tucked under you, and so your back isn't in a straight position, or your head is forward because the seats are, or your shoulders are collapsing, you know, so a bad car seat, or a bad seat at work. You could get to a point where postural habits are causing a lot of chronic pain as well, and this may not actually be arthritic. It may still be muscular problems and soft tissue problems.
Lena, you're absolutely right. And one of the prime examples we give in the book is the way people talk on the telephone. You mentioned that a minute ago. As I'm sitting here with you doing this interview, I have a headset on. And,
yeah, it's important to point. It's
very important. And many people, as Dr. Lauren says in our book, Preventing Arthritis, he's treated so many women who have done this scenario. They'll be on the phone and they'll be filing their nails. So they have their phone tucked between shoulder and ear, so to speak.
Actually, you know, I have to say something here. I don't know very many women who file their nails while they're on the phone, but I do know a lot of women who are on a computer working when they're on the phone.
Okay, well, whatever example you like. This is the example he gave me because he's heard it so many times from patients. At any rate, you do it one time, two times, three times, 10 times, maybe nothing is going to happen. You keep doing it on a regular basis or throughout the whole day. If that's your modus operandi throughout a whole day, you're going to have a sore neck. In time, that sore neck, the strain on the ligaments and the tendons and the muscles in your neck, that's going to lead to a degeneration. This is his experience over 50 years of treating people with pain. It's going to lead, it's a sure path to osteoarthritis.
So part of what we're saying is that osteoarthritis either is going to occur in a younger individual from a rather profound injury of some sort, and a not very good healing situation in the sense of nutrient status and antioxidant status, and maybe even repeating, having an injury and then having a postural change which causes other problems. So that can occur younger. Otherwise, you're going to see this occur from sort of long-term bad habits and aging. All of that implies, you know, hormonal changes and things like that.
Sure, absolutely. There's a shortcut to it, and there's the longer route to it. Either way, we all get it, and at some point, because if you look at x-rays of people over a certain age, you know, over 65, 70, everybody shows wear and tear of the joints. Not everybody, however, Lena, has the symptoms. And not everybody has the pain. Not everybody has the reduced limitation. And so it's important to, and that we don't really know why. Could be pain. Some people have different thresholds of pain tolerance. There's a whole lot of different reasons.
Well, I think actually even just reading the research in your book that we have a clue why. And part of it is that, and we'll come back to this in a second. It's clear that there's a connection between obesity and osteoarthritis, and it isn't precisely because people are carrying more weight, because weightlifters don't inevitably, I mean, it depends on how somebody lifts weights, whether or not they lose bone in their joints and cartilage, but it isn't because of the extra weight. It seems to be either hormonal or have to do with other sorts of metabolic problems with people who are persistently overweight. And then that, as Dr. Lawrence points out, leads to a very dangerous spiral of inactivity, which also causes more osteoarthritis. And he also points out that cancer is higher in people who don't exercise, and that cancer is an anaerobic disease, and it attacks mostly tissues where there isn't enough oxygen. And I just said a mouthful, and I'll let you respond when we come back from break. How's that? You're listening to your own health. Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, on the phone with Martin Zucker, who is the co-author with pain specialist Dr. Ronald Lawrence of the book Preventing Arthritis. The long title is A Holistic Approach to Life Without Pain. The book is published by Putnam. If you missed parts of today's show and want to get a cassette copy of this or any other in the series Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call my information number 24 hours a day at 707-773-4727. You can also comment if you wish or ask questions. We were just talking about the danger of inactivity and the higher rate of osteoarthritis in a less intuitive way than you'd think of people with who are obese. So activity is terribly important, but also, as we've been saying, has to be balanced. You have a wonderful interview with Dr. Squat, Dr. Hatfield, who I very early in my career, when I was bodybuilding very seriously, read. And I loved reading that interview because one of the things that he says, which is something that I found to be true as well, because I was a weightlifter for many years, and I still am. I just I bodybuilt for a while, and then at some point, as he points out, as you get older, if you have any sense, you kind of scale back. It isn't that you're not training hard. You still train hard, but you have to train with tremendous sensitivity toward range of motion. And one of the most common mistakes that I find is that people they think that range of motion means you have to move in a complete range of motion while you're doing the weightlifting. And if you're holding a weight in your hand, that isn't the time when you need to do a complete range of motion. You actually need to move in a range of motion that protects the joint. So you have to be very accurate with weightlifting. And often I tell people not to go past 90 degrees with their joints when they're carrying a weight in their hands. It's different from other kinds of exercise where you get to do full range, like swimming or doing other things. But anyway, that was a very nice interview. I kind of want to move on to the common treatment plans that are used for people with pain, including the downsides of using pain medications and how cortisone works and is used and its drawbacks, and also something about surgery. So why don't we start with cortisone? Because that's what people—that's the first thing the doctor says is, let's just shoot some cortisone in there. Is there any reason to kind of slow down on that activity, do you think?
Well, cortisone is a wonderful medical drug, and it certainly has helped a lot of people who have pain and inflammation, and it's really a wonderful medical tool. However, if it's used, and all physicians know this, it has to be used very judiciously, because if it's used too long, and it can cause damage to cartilage. And it can also cause many other conditions that could be damaged to kidneys, and there's a lot of downsides to prescribing it over time, and physicians are very aware of this. I think today you see more of the use of the anti-inflammatories, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. That is, the non-cortisone anti-inflammatories. They're very common, and whether it's Motrin or the new things, Celebrex or Vioxx, they are very, very popular, and they have some problems as well.
Well, let's stop for a moment. I want to go back to cortisone. Cortisone is a synthetic version of cortisol. Cortisol is the hormone that we produce during exercise and also in response to stress, and it helps to send glucose and to the right areas to help you if you need to fly or do various other things. When I say a synthetic version, I mean that it's been slightly skewed. It isn't precisely the same molecular structure as cortisol. And also, it's interesting to note that even too much cortisol hanging around in the body causes a cascade of effects that are dangerous, because it's necessary and essential hormone, but too high and it throws the balance of everything else off. Too much cortisol in the body is catabolic. Too much stress hormone, and you begin to lose your muscle and your bone mass. And people tend to gain weight in their bellies when their cortisol levels are too high all the time. So synthetic cortisone, my engineer is a pharmacist, so he's just written me a note that says that actually it isn't so much the kidneys that you worry about with cortisone shots. You worry more about decreasing glucose tolerance and lowering adrenal function, and there's weight gain. But the other problem with using it directly into a joint, as you said, is that it works to reduce inflammation at the site very quickly, but when it wears off, boy, are you in pain. I mean, it doesn't solve the problem. It reduces inflammation. Now, in an absolutely critical situation with an older individual where you need them to keep moving, you might want to do that from time to time. But as you pointed out, as I've heard from other people I've interviewed, biochemists about nutritive approach to arthritis, the main problem here is that you are damaging the joint when you shoot cortisone into it. So that's certainly not a good way of doing it.
Well, if the person is old enough and they can get like an injection once a year, then you know the trade-off is fine.
Yeah, yeah. And George is shaking his head and saying yes, that you know once or twice a year for older individuals, if it works, you know. Now, what is it that you don't like about Vioxx and Celebrex?
Well, it's not what I don't like. I'm a medical writer, and I talk to doctors. And Ron Lawrence, the physician with whom I wrote this book, is a pain specialist. He's used every pain medication that's come along over his 50-year career, and he feels that these new non-steroidal anti-inflammatories will, in time, show problems, show the side effects that the earlier generation of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories are producing, such as problems within the GI tract, bleeding, ulcers, things like that. GI bleeding, gastrointestinal tract bleeding is a major side effect with many of the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. I think that the thing that, and I'd rather not go into this area of treatment because I'm not a physician, Elena.
Yeah, but you can speak to what's in the book, certainly.
Yes, I certainly can, but I'd rather...
No, that's all I'm asking.
Right, I'd rather speak to the issue that people should, and you brought it up a minute ago, that people shouldn't really take arthritis so lightly. People very often think they can take a painkiller or they can get a joint replacement, and that's going to solve their arthritis problem. But you know, taking painkillers regularly over long periods of time have side effects.
And how?
And that's right. You know this, and I'm sure you've covered this issue on your show before. They have all kinds of side effects, and you're dealing then with a new set of symptoms that you developed. And arthritis can decrease your activity level. You decreased your activity level, and then you run the risk for other problems. If your activity level is greatly reduced because of severe arthritis in the knees or the hips or the feet, then you're running the risk of inactivity, which then becomes a risk factor for cardiovascular problems. So arthritis has a lot of... It's a domino effect of a cascade of events that can take place. It's not just the arthritis, the pain, but it's the lack of mobility. It's the range of motion problem. It's the loss of desire to take part in life's joys, things that you want to do. There's that corny ad on television that shows somebody eliminating their arthritic pain by taking the latest non-steroidal anti-inflammatory so they can go out and play with their grandkids. The fact is that arthritis can cause a loss of the most wonderful joys we take for granted in life. Social activities, going out, leaving your house, getting out of a chair, getting up out of a chair, they're basic fundamental things, and arthritis can be very serious on the psyche, have very serious effects on the psyche. People become depressed, they become anxious. So arthritis is something that people should not take lightly, and that's why we wrote this book.
Well, in fact, the book is primarily an attempt to help people avoid getting arthritis. There is some advice for people who already have it, and my response to hearing what you just said, which was is that there are people who are listening who are older now and do have really crippling arthritis and are in a lot of pain and are limited in terms of movement and know that they shouldn't be and know it's dangerous. And they're in so much profound pain that they really feel that there's no way out except for pain medications and anti-inflammatories and stuff. And they feel like they're stuck in that. So Lena, maybe we should spend a moment talking about some of the things that Dr. Lawrence suggests for reducing pain.
Let me give you two simple things that people can do. They don't even have to walk out of their house to do it. One thing is cut down on the sugar. Dr. Lawrence found over 50 years of treating people with pain problems that sugar, it's all this extra sugar that we have in our diets, causes pain.
It does.
It causes pain.
Yes,
it seems in some way to eliminate calcium from the body. It seems in some way to irritate, hyper-irritate nerves. And he has found that when he can get people with pain to cut down on their sugar intake, whether it's the sugar you put in your coffee or whether it's the sugar-laden cereal you eat, whatever, just cut down on the sugar. This can go a long way. This can make an impact on the pain. The other thing, and this was really surprising to me in my research on this, but was the fact about drinking water. Hydration no doctor will tell you, you know, here's the prescription for your pain, drink more water. Have you ever heard that from a doctor?
Not so much.
Yet I was hearing from doctors that, yeah, they are able to cut down on people's pain, arthritic pain, just by having them drink more water. And why? Because if your body is in a hydrated state, one of the symptoms of that hydration, is pain.
That's right.
And it's a complicated biochemical scenario that goes on, but as far as arthritis is concerned, if you drink enough water, you bring hydration, you bring liquid to the joints, to the cartilage, and cartilage is 70% water. You bring it to the cartilage through the bones. If you don't drink enough water, your body has to suck it up out of the plasma, out of the blood, and bring it to the cartilage in a different way, which causes inflammation of nerve endings in the joint capsule that surrounds the joint. So the fact that you can reduce your pain just by drinking water was to me a major revelation in my research. And it is also a prevention factor. So whether you have arthritis or you want to take steps to prevent it, you have to increase your water intake.
Now, in addition to that, another wonderful thing here is the use of vitamin C in large doses. And he really uses mega doses of vitamin C. Dr. Lawrence uses it in water. He has people mix up like 5 grams in maybe 2 cups of water and put it in the fridge. And he uses it both for pain relief, which is wonderful, because what happens with vitamin C is, since we don't make it in the body, it goes in and it quenches these free radicals that are being produced in an inflammation situation, but it gets used up, so you have to keep redoing it over and over. So you just keep taking it, and he's suggesting taking it before meals. That also seems to help people lose weight.
Yeah, that's wonderful. We call it vitamin C cocktail, and he's been prescribing vitamin C for many, many years, and the idea is that you take vitamin C, you make a cocktail, you put it in water, you mix about 5 grams in water, about in 16 ounces of water, and you then create enough of the vitamin C cocktail for a couple of meals, so you'll be drinking about 8 ounces of water each time with vitamin C, spiked with vitamin C, and you take that about a half an hour before a meal. And it seems to suppress appetite. So if somebody is interested in losing weight, here is a very simple method of doing it. He's found over the years that when he can get his patients to do this, that they are able to, it helps them lose weight. It creates a feeling of satiety, a feeling of satisfaction, so they're going to eat less. And vitamin C, as you well know, I'm sure, is a marvelous free radical scavenger. And it's also great for relieving pain. So vitamin C is, And vitamin C, I should also say, Lena, is also important to the production of collagen. And collagen is the protein in cartilage, which kind of collects the water, gives it its shock absorbing property. So vitamin C is important for preventing and for dealing with arthritis.
And it's much cheaper, I might add, than glucosamine and chondroitin. Although Dr. Lawrence does like the use of glucosamine and chondroitin, vitamin C is very inexpensive. And I might just throw in here that people are always asking me what form of vitamin C. Honestly, most people do just fine with just regular ascorbic acid, and you can buy it in bulk, and it's really inexpensive, and you don't have to get anything very fancy. If somebody is worried about the acidic content and taking a lot of it, you can get a mineral ascorbate, you can get a calcium ascorbate, and then Dr. Lawrence also points out that there are some companies that actually do make available sodium ascorbate, which I usually think of being only for IV use or injection, but apparently it is available as well, and that's a very well tolerated and non-acidic form as well.
Yeah, it's the form. I mean, I've been personally using sodium ascorbate for 15 years, and this is the form that Linus Pauling liked, and I find it just easier on the tummy.
Yep, exactly. Okay, so glucosamine and chondroitin, you kind of surprised me in this book with this, because I thought I understood chondroitin, although I understand it to be good for a number of things, including the heart muscle, which is interesting. I didn't understand. I mean, Dr. Lawrence actually feels that chondroitin is more important than glucosamine. This was a surprise.
Well, what we did, Lena, is that we went to the expert. We went to Dr. Jason Theotosakis, who was the author of The Arthritis Cure, and he really introduced glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate here in the United States, because we wanted somebody who had a lot of experience with this. And the information we have on there, a lot of that, most of it is based on his comments. And there's a major problem out there. I mean, first of all, let me say that glucosamine and chondroitin are really wonderful for relieving pain, relieving the symptoms of osteoarthritis, and also they have a chondroprotective effect, and by that it means that they help the cartilage tissue from degenerating. So there's a protective, preventive effect there. One problem that Dr. Theotosakis mentioned to me, and we put it in the book, which we felt was very important, that some of the manufacturers of chondroitin, because it is very expensive. Chondroitin is very expensive to manufacture, that they're not putting in the products what they say is on the label. So people have to be really careful with that. And he said that many patients came to him after getting some initial improvements using chondroitin. They would come to him after a while and say, it's just leveled off, I'm not making any more improvements. He said that could be because you're taking a product that is inferior.
Yeah, I actually have heard also that the HCL version is actually better than the sulfate version.
You're talking about now glucosamine.
Glucosamine.
Yes, you're correct. The body actually, there are two versions of it. Glucosamine sulfate, which is more expensive than glucosamine hydrochloride. And in the body, the glucosamine sulfate is converted to glucosamine hydrochloride at any rate. So why take the more expensive version?
Because I've heard it works better, and I've heard that there's less tampering with it, and there's less salt in it.
That is not Dr. Theotosakis' opinion.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, it's the opinion of some biochemists that I've had on the show who've also studied this. So I guess it's going to have to be the consumer trying out different ones.
Exactly.
Yeah, trying different ones and seeing.
Exactly.
But the chondroitin is very, very important, and this is something that I wasn't clear on. MSM is really remarkable stuff.
Oh, it sure is.
The thing that I've discovered about MSM is not everybody has an easy time taking it orally, which is too bad because apparently it works really well orally. But it's a methylating substance, and it also helps people with sulfur. It's got a lot of sulfur in it, and some people just don't sulfate well and have trouble with their stomach when they take MSM. But MSM works brilliantly through the skin.
Yes, it can be, if you can get a good version of it.
In powdered version.
Gel form or
powder.
Gel form or powder and just apply it to the skin. Yeah, I wrote a book earlier with Dr. Stan Jacob at Oregon Health Sciences University and Dr. Lawrence on MSM. Yes, MSM is wonderful for pain, any inflammation, fibromyalgia, allergies. It's incredible for allergies. Some people do have difficulty taking it. They may develop a mild rash, or they may get some intestinal upset from it. Probably 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 20 people may have that problem. The suggestion is that you try it at a low dose and take as much as you need to get relief. And if you go to a certain level and you start to get a reaction, then you listen to your body. That's your limit. And for some people, it can be they can take an awful lot. Some people, they can only take very little.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that people are taking several grams, like 3,000 to maybe even 10,000 to 3,000, 5,000 milligrams, 3 to 5 grams of MSM orally, high dosages. Whereas with the glucosamine, the chondroitin, it seems to be sort of somewhere around 1,500 of the glucosamine to 600 of the chondroitin, which can sometimes be dropped for maintenance for some people. Some people have to continue to take those doses.
Yeah, that seems to be standard doses that work. And I've been telling people based on my exposure to what doctors have been telling me is that you go with the standard amount of glucosamine and chondroitin, which is glucosamine 1500 milligrams a day, and chondroitin 1200 milligrams a day, and then you add whatever amount of MSM that you can take to get the additional relief. And that's a powerful package. The glucosamine and chondroitin, if you get a good quality combination and you're taking those amounts, they're going to give a lot of relief for people with arthritis. And then throw in that extra MSM by itself, you're going to get even more relief. We had one gentleman from North Carolina who wrote us after our MSM book was published, Lena, and he was up to 40 grams of MSM plus his glucosamine and chondroitin. This was a gentleman who was a construction worker, had battered his body pretty badly, and it took him 40 grams of MSM to get total relief, and it worked for him, and that's what he needs to take. But he can tolerate that. I don't recommend people go out and take 40 grams of MSM, but, you know, some people may get relief with 5, some people may get relief with 2, some people may get relief with 10. My wife, who's an ex-dancer and has arthritis as a result of that, needs to take about 10,000 milligrams a day of MSM, plus she's taking her glucosamine and chondroitin. So everybody is different, and we have to keep that in mind always.
Yes, dose dependency. It's one of the things that researchers often miss, modern researchers, when they're looking at vitamin and mineral scientific papers, is that it's dose dependent. If you give too small a dose, or if you assume everybody needs the same one, it ain't going to work.
Absolutely.
You want to say a word about Sammy?
I don't.
You don't want to say a word about Sammy?
I don't want to say anything about
it. Okay, there's something about it in the book, so we'll leave it to that. Now, there's some other surprises, which shouldn't be surprises, is that the B vitamins are very important. And also the fat-soluble vitamins, the other antioxidants, A and E. E is very important for inflammation. Vitamin D is enormous. I had Dr. Reinhold Veith on the show, who's the researcher who's discovered that vitamin D is not toxic and that most people are terribly deficient in vitamin D. And the essential fats, the fish oils, are enormous. Dr. Lawrence has people really slogging down the fish oil.
Yes, he does, and I think that the research hasn't been done yet with osteoarthritis. It's been more done with rheumatoid arthritis because of the inflammation. It's more of an inflammatory process than osteoarthritis. But we think that the fatty acids are going to have a good effect, a good use here for osteoarthritis as well. And indeed, there is. Clinically, Dr. Lawrence has found that it is indeed helpful.
So, generally speaking...
Lena, one thing I'd just like to say, and I'm sure you would agree with me 100%, and we really haven't touched on it, and that is the importance of a quality diet. I mean, we just take it for granted, and that you are what you eat. If you're eating well, you're giving your joints as well as the rest of your body good quality nutrients to be strong. And if you're not eating a healthy diet, I would assume that most of your listeners are eating a better diet. Otherwise, they wouldn't be listening to you.
Well, oddly, I mean, I've done some shows on, there's confusion about what that is. And that's another thing that's going to be somewhat individual. People are going to have different capacities for eating certain foods. Some people are sensitive to some things. But people persist in doing things like eating cold cereal, which always surprises me, or using things like rice dream instead of milk, which has no nutrient value at all. It's just rice syrup, basically. It's just sugar. So there's still a lot of confusion. That's why I brought up the issue of pre-agrarian diet, because in the early days when people are hunting and gathering and eating fresh vegetables and protein and fruits and nuts and things like that, they did better than when they started eating large amounts of carbohydrates and sugars and starches and grains and whatnot.
Well, freshness is very important.
Whole foods.
Whole foods, absolutely. We all have our individual foods that we may or may not tolerate, but within what we do tolerate, we should be gunning for food that is as wholesome, as fresh, and as unprocessed
and
possible.
And organic, obviously.
Obviously.
He mentions that in the book as well.
Yes, big time, yes.
Yeah. There's plenty of other information about the book about acupuncture and chiropractic and massage and Rolfing and lots of discussion. There's even a nice little section about sex in your joints, about how it's a good pain reliever because you're raising your endorphin levels, so that was cute. But we are, unfortunately, really cascading down to the end of our hour. We've been talking with Martin Zucker. The name of the book is Preventing Arthritis, A Holistic Approach to Life Without Pain. This was written with Ronald M. Lawrence, MD, PhD, and it's published by Putnam. And as I said, we've been talking with Martin Zucker. I want to thank you for making yourself available for the show.
Lena, my pleasure, and thank you for asking so many good questions and stimulating me to think about this. And I hope your listeners will consider looking at risk factors, not just for heart, but also for keeping their joints healthy, because unhealthy joints really decrease a lot of the quality of life.
Thanks. We're just totally out of time. Thank you very much, Martin Zucker, and the book is Preventing Arthritis. Thanks for listening. My engineer, as always, is George Curtis at the Powerhouse Brewery, and thank you to the Powerhouse Brewery for letting me sit here and do the show. On the KPFA side, Lisa Ballard is taking care of the board. Thank you for that. If you need more information or want to get a cassette copy of this or any other in the series, Your Own Health and Fitness, you can call 707-874-2772, 874-2772, or go to www.yourownhealthandfitness.com, and the tape list is there. Next week, an interview with researcher Dr. George Gilson, which will include some exciting new information about the treatment of multiple sclerosis using histamine blockers, so don't miss that. I'm Lena Berman. This has been Your Own Health and Fitness, which is produced live through listener-sponsored Free Speech Radio. May it live forever. KPFA FM, Berkeley, California.